The Hormuz crisis represents the biggest energy shock in history. What will be the legacy? Now, in an age of energy security, people will want energy that's closer to home. It doesn't say clean or dirty, it just says closer to home, more reliable. Energy security is the number one reason, not climate change. And that previous grand and beautiful vision of net zero goals through the Paris Agreement, that dream is dead.
The basis of the emissions trading system, the reason that we did this is because we had the belief that if we did it, we would establish a mechanism that the world would follow. And the sad truth of it is, aside from New Zealand and Canada, there is no region in the world with a carbon price above $40 and almost none with above $20. So the world is not following. We have to ask ourselves, can and should we still do this? Should we still be a vegetarian in a world of carnivores?
The energy landscape is being reshaped. In this context, it is very important to understand the global perspective and also the European response.
The challenge of reconciling its decarbonization objective with security of supply, economic competitiveness, strategic autonomy, and affordable energy prices. This is not a linear process, rather it is a transition marked by tensions, trade-offs, and difficult decisions that require realism and pragmatism.
If you're only demonstrating that if you deal with climate change you reduce your competitiveness, you're doing the opposite. You're convincing countries not to do it. We've garnered the low-hanging fruits, but in order to deal with the next stage of decarbonisation that would get us anywhere near to 90% greenhouse gas reduction, we need an ETS price of 180 to 240. That will have a significant effect on competitiveness. So we have to be honest with ourselves.
Europe cannot go it alone. Europe is too small a share of global emissions to make a difference. Europe should be pragmatic about how it pursues its policies, including opening its doors to the affordable clean energy technologies that are now available.
The increase in availability of batteries in the last 5 years is more impressive than what happened with solar in 15 years.
And when you pair these big batteries, grid-scale batteries, with solar, for example, you get clean, firm, 24/7 power. That's what's coming by 2030. I think it'll be economic in many places.
These are real game changers. So it enables Europe to rethink what it's been doing, and instead of saying, we will do sustainability, even at the cost of competitiveness, to change that dialogue to, we will do sustainability when it makes sense for us to do it in competitiveness terms.
There's a question in the audience about the future of nuclear in Europe in particular, and whether we will get back to that or not.
We are seeing a nuclear renaissance in Finland, Sweden, France, Netherlands, Poland, Slovenia, Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania.
I think Europe will fail in the renaissance of conventional nuclear power. Europe needs to standardize on one design and then to build 10 of them the way that the Chinese have done. Commit to building 10 or 20 on a fixed design. The same steel that's used in a Swedish nuclear plant should be approved in Spain without needing any extra permission. And similarly, the supply chain can build up. The welders, who are very skilled welders for nuclear welding, they can be moving from one plant to the next, so they have job security rather than dispersing.
So Vijay is asking the question, when will Europe learn?